morning. Today is Thursday. It's the 13th of May. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor, wannabe in her worst dreams. Yes. the DA, Maggie Fleming. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
I got your attention, though, didn't we?
I was like, what am I doing now?
That was funny. See what happens when you're not here?
Yeah, that's true.
You can't even throw the Nerf ball at me.
Right. Can't kick you under the counter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, now you indicated that you had a question for me to play with instead of me throwing a question out to you. So let her rip.
Okay, so why do we say turn a blind eye?
Turn a blind eye. Not to justice, just turn a blind eye?
Yes.
I would suspect that so that the good eye has a better field of vision of what's in front of you.
That's interesting. So, you know, it means to consciously ignore unwanted information.
Oh.
And it comes from Admiral Horatio Nelson, who would look through his telescope using his blind eye to avoid signals from his superior telling him to withdraw from battle. I like it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we all have moments like that, don't we?
Right.
Consciously or perhaps unconsciously.
Right.
Oh, gee. Hey, what is the state of criminal prosecution in Humboldt County? Yesterday, the supervisor Bushnell was on and lamented she had a situation in her retail store. There certainly seems to be a lot more druggy and bad stuff. There was the shooting down in the southern part of the county or northern Mendocino. Just all this stuff that the panacea of legalization was supposed to take care of doesn't seem to be taking care of it. And I'm wondering, is it just a heightened sensitivity from some of us, or is there more strange stuff going on?
So that's like an 8-part question, and I'll try to get to all parts. But first of all, the state of the court criminal justice system is we are up and running. It's still limited. So we're still using, you know, the entire courtroom to do jury trials. We've got two going again this week. So we are moving cases through the system again. We obviously have a huge backlog. There is a very sad scenario where what I'm seeing is, you know, because I do a lot of the charging, I'm not getting one police report on somebody. I'll have four or five because unless they get arrested when they commit the crime and are housed at the jail, you know, being told, hey, your cite date for court is 6 to 8 weeks from now means they're out committing more crimes meanwhile. So we're seeing a lot of that, and then we're seeing the same, sadly, even with convictions, because we don't have a lot of consequences. And that's not just COVID-related. That's sort of the change in how the laws view a lot of low-level felonies. So we're just seeing sort of a lot of repeat offenders.
If you get a multiple low levels, do they add up to a medium level?
No, they don't. And part of the issue that we saw, you know, back when we had all the changes starting in 2011 was our local jails are becoming small prisons. Fewer and fewer people actually go off to state prison because now you can only go to prison for the violent, serious crimes. So we don't really have a capacity at most of our local jails for housing people long-term, right? So now if someone, for example, I know we've talked about this before, you have someone who's dealing drugs, even a pound of methamphetamine, they're going to do their time at our local jail. So if you have someone sentenced to, you know, 2 years for a drug sales case, and they're going to do every day at our jail, that means that bed isn't available for someone who's, you know, pending trial on other felonies. So it's kind of, you know, one of those snowball effects where everything's gotten pushed down to the local level and we don't have a capacity. The other one that we see that's really frightening for us are the multiple DUI offenders. You know, it used to be if you were at arraignment and you said, Your Honor, this is his third and, you know, 8 months and we're concerned, it's high blood out, they'd go in custody. And that's pretty much impossible now. And it's tough because we're talking about people who should not be allowed to not be in custody, who are out on the streets, who, as I say, sort of just continually pick up new cases.
So how does this build confidence in the criminal justice system for the local citizen?
Well, you know, it's one thing that people have voted for, and I know that people want to see more services for people, but we've got to find a way, number one, to provide those services, and then number two, to actually require people to do those services. So if we say, well, this person's problem is all related to substance abuse, we've got to have enough capacity in our programs for people then to get treatment and to require that they get treatment. We still have a lot of, you know, people who say, yeah, yeah, I'll go do that, and they don't. And then what do we do with them, right? So that's one area that I think we've really got to improve on. And, of course, that also involves mental health treatment, because that is one area where we are sadly very, very hard hit in this rural area. And we've got to find a way to sort of address that, because there's too many people out there that really do need those services, and it's not happening.
Well, I guess to be kind of more historical in my perspective, I would think that it would be better to have them off the street,
yes,
and then deal with the mental, rather than having mental health services and still have them out on the street.
Right, right.
Is that the do you have a sense that that's the priority? Or, I mean, we hear from the law enforcement folks is that they're driving around with mental health folks now, or mental health people are responding to situations along with the cops.
Right.
I mean, if we have limited resources, it seems like they're being spread out in ways, and in perhaps the timeline is a little different than what it has been.
So that's a good sort of way to look at, you know, they're there for various reasons. Number one is a lot of the conduct isn't necessarily criminal. So having someone there who is trying to address their mental health needs is trying to help them before they engage in criminal conduct. And then the other part of it is sort of rethinking the way these people are being addressed, because, you know, obviously some of them are fearful, some of them don't trust people, some of them.
Right,
so if
right.
you have a social worker there who's trying to say, you
they
know,
can, they can help out. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
we'll continue this when we come back.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming, not running for supervisor.
No, thank you, Brian.
Yeah. You're just having too much fun where you are to be leaving, yes. With some of these challenges that are out there, Maggie, whether it's with mental health or other related issues, you know, priorities, I suspect it's like anything else. You know, this area, if it's criminal justice, we'll call it criminal justice, that the state can afford or allocates X number of dollars. Okay. And then the battle is, how does that money work its way down? When you hear about some of these decisions that are going on, whether it's sheriffs not having to be law enforcement agents, cutting the state prison population in half, shutting down Susanville, I mean, some of these things that you just kind of go, what in the world is going on? Are those budget-driven? Or are those all philosophical things that are kind of running at odds with the concept, the traditional concept of consequences, of responsibility, of accountability, of law-abiding citizens, of bad guys going to jail, and all the other things that we kind of grew up thinking was part of what our society was?
So I think they're more driven by politics and philosophy. And I will say this. I think there were a lot of positive changes made, you know, in the last couple decades about how we address people in the criminal justice system. You know, I think having the ability for people to receive more services, you know, and education is critical for changing their future. And, you know, and I think that's true for juveniles. We have far too many kids who drop out of school and then are having problems. And so the more we can address, you know, at a younger age, the issues they're trying to confront and helping them, the better off they're going to be, and obviously our society as well. Where I think it's gotten, you know, to sort of a tipping point that's creating so many problems is we have sort of a narrative-driven political situation with our legislative bodies where it's what can we do to just keep changing and reducing the consequences for violence. So right now...
But
you know,
what's at the root of... Do you have any idea what's at the root of that?
It's this idea that everybody sort of sees it as like prison is bad, jail is bad, locking people up is bad. And it's to the point now where... You know, I know we've talked about this. I get these letters, you know, I have to respond to these letters for people who are in prison for a certain term of years. They're supposed to be doing it at 80% time. And the Department of Corrections is saying, well, you know, they've been a pretty good prisoner. How about 50% time? How about they get early release? How about, and I think, wow, you know, they committed a really serious violent crime. It terrorized victims. And this term of years was selected based upon it's the appropriate consequence for the seriousness of their actions. And an example right now that's moving through our legislators is a bill to change the definition of robbery. So robbery is the taking by force from a person, you know, their property. So, you know, a lot of times people say our house got robbed, and that's not, you know, your house gets burglarized. Robbery is somebody scares you, threatens you, or physically harms you to take from your person property. And one of the areas that we have with robbery is with store owners, store clerks. So the idea is if someone comes in, grabs something, and isn't going to pay for it, and the shop person goes and, you know, sort of blocks their way and says, hey, put that down, you know, you didn't pay for it, and they get shoved or they get beaten or the person shows them that they have a knife, you know, and they back away, that's a robbery. They want to change it so that it's only if there's serious bodily injury or the person has a weapon that will be called robbery. Otherwise, it's going to be petty theft. And I thought, when I first heard of this, people really don't understand how mom-and-pop stores are struggling with this level of theft. And so many of them are to that point where they sort of step in and say, you know, you didn't pay for it, put it down, leave it alone. And now if they get pushed or hit or whatever, it's going to be petty theft. That's not petty theft. Petty theft is when you walk in, you pocket something, you walk out, and nobody gets hurt.
Well, I would think if there was a physical altercation, that wouldn't be theft. That would be something in addition to that.
Right.
Huh. So you know, and then you've got the big guys that physically can intimidate or, you know, just have the physical advantage and could take somebody out. They may not have a gun, but they still could do as much damage as anybody would ever entertain.
Right. And it's also by force or fear, right? So here it is, you've decided I can't let this person walk away with those items. I can't let them pick up those, you know, those items, those jeans from the front display and walk out with them because that's going to be too much for my business to take. And you try to intervene, and now it doesn't count. You know, the legislators have decided maybe this is one more area that shouldn't be treated that way. And we used to have grand theft person as a felony. It was sort of a step down from robbery. The idea is if someone took something from basically a person's immediate area, they took that away, unless it's over $950. So it's sort of to this point of when are we ever going to actually stop the behavior with a consequence that's really affecting people's ability to have jobs, to work businesses, to make money?
To do what they need to do, yeah.
Yeah.
KINS.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redec, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Humboldt Bay Bistro, along with Randall Sand and Gravel. Now, Maggie, earlier or a little bit later on this morning, we got the juvenile hall. I don't know if you say grand opening, because that kind of makes it sound a little something more than what it is. But the opening, the official opening of the new building,
yeah.
Is that going to give you a little bit more breathing space, or is it just maybe relief that after 5 or 6 years that thing is finally completed?
So it won't really change all that much because the kids who are housed at the hall, that stays pretty constant. I think I went on a tour a couple weeks ago, and it really is, it's a much better facility. It's much better for their ability to deal with, if there's a kid who's really struggling, having issues, they have other housing sections where they could put him, because obviously it's very stressful. If you're 14 or 15 and you're living at the hall and the guy in the room next to you is having some sort of issues, it can be very, very stressful for, the other kids. So just, and then also the way the officers will pull up and bring in the youthful individuals, it's just a much better setup for that. And then the classrooms are really much better set up, much more state-of-the-art, because that's the other part of it, is they're responsible for the continuing education of all the minors who are housed there. So it's really going to be, once they've completed and, have their yard set up and everything, it's going to be a really nice facility. And I think much more welcoming for the people who have to be there, which is going to be good for those kids.
So we've got that facility that's happening. And then also, I guess, from what we were told last week, that the sheriff is going to maybe actually be able to break ground
in the
parking lot. I mean,
right.
I mean, talk about a fantasy coming true.
I know. It's just, for those of us who work, in these facilities, you sort of gear up and you get excited, and then you go, oh, it's going to be a couple of years. So,
yeah.
I mean, think how long it took for the hall. Right? What was that, a decade that they've been working on that?
Yeah. Well,
so, our move up to the fifth floor with the child abuse services team and our victim witness division, we started that, with planning and preparing. That's been about 5 years. So it's really, and then of course COVID slowed it way down. I mean, it took so
sure.
much longer for everything to get completed, but we're finally there, and it's really exciting, and it's so nice for us all to be in one building rather than, across the street. And and also obviously be right here close to the courtrooms. But it's a very long process. It makes home improvement projects, you know, where everybody goes, oh, I had no idea how long it would take. I think that's a joke compared to what it is when you're dealing with, you know, all the compliance issues and everything else we have to go through. And then sometimes you get it done, and the next inspection, they tell you this shouldn't have been done this way. And you kind of go, well, I'm not the guy who designed it. Because, you know, I don't know about all the rules and regs, but I thought they did. So yeah. it's a long, long, hard slog to get these things done.
So when that starts, obviously there's going to be some displacement. You know, those cars won't be able to be there. When it's completed, though, what is it going to mean for criminal justice in the area from your perspective? Obviously, it increases capacity a little bit, which I think, based on our discussion even earlier in the show, that's a positive. But
right.
Is it going to be a fundamental change, or is it just kind of a slight little nuance, but we still have got the same basic challenges?
It's going to be improvement in part because of more of the needs they're going to be addressing, you know, because obviously, for example, right now, one of their units, or I don't know if they call it a dorm, is set up to help people who have had serious mental issues such that they're not competent to proceed to court. And, you know, for so long we were having to wait for them to be treated elsewhere. And so sort of trying to provide more services, having a regular, psychologist, a regular, you know, basically nurse practitioner who's there to help them with their mental health issues. Because sadly, you know, we do see in our system this incredible overlap between people who are having really serious mental health issues and then, you know, committing crimes and being housed at the jail. So I think, you know, in addition to increased capacity, it's going to be increased services and also helping people transition as they leave the jail, which is a real critical step. I was talking to a tribal judge the other day about this, that I'd really like, we're trying to do more diversion with the tribal courts, and I would really like to see if possible if the tribes could help with that transition, you know, because the idea that someone gets out of jail and they're told, oh, a week from now, here's your appointment to see your counselor, you know, they don't always get to that appointment. And if we could have more of a true handoff, you know, someone from the tribe who's here to help them, maybe even provide them, you know, a ride to where they need to go, those sorts of things, that would be a huge step forward in helping these people literally transition out of the criminal justice system.
Now, in a positive, you've also got teen court coming up on a significant anniversary as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Teen court's amazing program. Really good.
Do we appreciate it?
I do.
Well,
you?
Okay. I think a lot of folks don't, you know, unless they've been involved with it or they know
right.
somebody, have no idea what it is, the impact has been from it.
Right.
It just is something, night court, traffic court, teen court. Okay, I mean, you hear about it and you move on.
Right. You know, I've sat through some of the hearings. I've gotten to watch the process. And I've always been impressed by sort of that notion of when peers, you know, because it's not an actual trial. It's really they hear about what the situation is, what the crime was, and then they determine the sentence. And it's really interesting in some ways how much tougher they are, you know. And I do think for many of them, they're sort of aware of this person's going down a really bad road, you know, whereas sometimes adults and even judges sometimes say, you know, hey, you made a mistake, don't do it again. But, you know, peers and particularly teenagers sometimes go, nope, they need to do this, this, and this, or they're going to keep doing this. And it's fascinating to me to see that, you know, because I don't think you necessarily expect that.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, since last we got together, John Morrison died. Judge John for a lot of folks. I knew him at a different level, not as a judge, but as a friend and as a dad and husband. You know, something like that, where you're seeing kind of that next old guard starting to disappear. That's got to be a little bit of a gut check for everybody in the criminal justice system.
Right. He was, he was just such a long-term great judge here, and everybody really enjoyed working with him. He was just such a kick. I remember when I was brand new, I was sitting in court to do a preliminary hearing, and he was sort of calling a roll call to see what should proceed, and he said, "Hey, you're new." And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Well, what do you got?" And I told him my case. And he said, "How long is it going to take?" And everybody was saying, an hour, 2 hours. And I had done a lot of prelims by the time I first started here. And I said, "About 15 minutes. And he went, "Ooh." He goes, "Okay, let's do yours first." I realized he just liked the fact that I was saying, "Let's get this done," And he was such a kick because, the prelims would go all day back then when it was a municipal court. And, we had municipal and superior court. And, he would always call traffic court because he liked doing that. And so literally you might be mid preliminary hearing and he'd say, "Just sit right there. I've just got to call a couple of these cases." And you'd, and then people would come up to the rail and he'd say, "All right, I see what you did." And what he would always do, he was so funny. He'd say, "Your fine is, it's $83. And the person would go, "Well, I can't pay that." And then he'd say, "Do you smoke?" And then he'd go, "Well, how much is a pack of cigarettes?" And they, they say, it was $3.50 or whatever. And he'd go, "That much? Geez. Okay, you're going to cut back on your cigarette smoking and you'll be able to pay this fine." He was such a good guy. And I still remember when we had court up in Hoopa and the court was closed. I think the ceiling was leaking. And he held court out in the parking lot. He had a big umbrella that he opened up. And he called the cases and people, he had his court reporter there under an umbrella and the DA was there under an umbrella. And we just went ahead and did it because he was going to make sure that, court was supposed to be held in Hoopa and it was going to happen. And I just, what a legacy. He's just such a, and of course his whole family, his mother and his brothers, everybody was involved. And, just a tremendous, I was really sad to read of his passing. Just a real amazing man.
Well, and good guy too.
Yeah.
I think that bringing, I wouldn't say normalcy because that would imply that others aren't that are wearing the robes, but he brought a regular guy perspective. At least that's what I saw, whether it was with the racing out at on Saturdays or Sundays, or if it was in the courtroom or even just, out in the yard kind of thing.
Right.
Normalcy. Right. And it'd be nice if that had to be a personality trait of a judge, that they had to be normal, whatever normal is, community standard, whatever. Did the judges do anything, make any acknowledgement or recognition or, you can't wear a black armband around a black robe. That would be kind of problematic.
They haven't yet. I don't know if they plan to, as sort of, the courts open up more, but right now we're not really having that many people in a courtroom. So it would be hard. In olden days, when a judge passed, they had the service and all the judges that were still alive, whether, currently serving or retiring, would be lined up in the front along the bench. And then all the attorneys and family members of the deceased would come into the courtroom. So you might have 70 or 80 people in a courtroom. Well, we're not currently doing that. So I hope that they will still honor him in some way, But obviously it might have to be different because of COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. Different seems to be the magic word of the moment these days. Well,
right.
thanks for coming in. Keep slugging away for us.
Thank you, Brian.
All right.
You do the same.
Thanks, Maggie. See everybody tomorrow.
Perfect.